Hello, everyone. Happy Sunday. Yeah, I was sitting here listening to Dove with my eyes cast downward. I often, when I'm listening, I don't look. You know, I listen without looking. That way there's no distraction. So when Dove started to finish speaking, I looked up and I saw Mulrooney Comic in the room. And then right after I saw that, he goes said that Mulrooney would be next. So John Mulrooney is a lot of fun to listen to. And I've certainly heard him be funny, but I do remember one particular teaching of his. I don't remember if it was in Pal Talk or if it's on CD or where it is. I was listening. It wasn't live like at a conference. I didn't see him, but I remember one particular teaching of his where he had some really good, meaningful stories to tell. You know, we all learn well from stories, and he had some good stories as well. So if you don't know John Mulrooney, I encourage you to hang around. If I had remembered that Mulrooney was going to be next, I might have made my plans that I could hang out, but I've already made other plans, so I'll be leaving right away afterwards. If you have the opportunity to hang around and hear Mulrooney, that would be great. Notice I lovingly call him Mulrooney. I got that from a friend of mine who calls him by that same name, his last name. So we are here now for the 7 steps to awakening. And we're going to begin tonight at 4:48. What I'm doing right now is putting a link to 4:48 in the room for anyone who wants to follow along with my journal. Let's see if you're listening on the radio. I can't tell if the radio is in the room. If you're listening on the radio, just go to RDA7. That is the digit 7. It is not spelled out. RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And then either on the menu bar on the top or else on the side menu on the right, find step 2. And then click on the numbering sequence that will allow you to find your way to 4:48. And that's where we're going to begin tonight. Before we begin, I would like to take some silence, we're going to take some silence with music. For Christmas, Jasmine gave me 4 really nice meditation CDs. And so I'll be sharing some of the shorter tunes with you. You know, some of these meditation CDs have very long, long songs, which is great for meditation. But every now and then there's one that's a little shorter. This one is called The River. It's by a guy named Michael De Maria. That's a nice name, Michael De Maria. And so why don't we listen to this? We'll just be a little bit silent in stillness while we listen to the music. So as I mentioned, we're going to begin with 448. And what I will do is read 448 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. This is quoting Yoga Vasistha, also known as the Supreme Yoga. And here we go. When one falls into this illusion of world appearance, he is at once preyed upon by countless other illusions which arise in the original illusion. When one falls into this illusion of world appearance, he is at once preyed upon by countless other illusions which arise in the original illusion. And so now we'll go to the journal and see what came for me while contemplating this. If belief is given to a little, belief is given to the whole. Remember this. One cannot be partly free from belief. Also remember, questioning dismantles ignorance and illusion. Kind of reminds me of a line in A Course in Miracles that says, you will accept this course in its entirety or not at all. It also kind of reminds me of something Laurent used to say when we lived together. He would talk about how if you let in even one ego thought, you let in the whole thought system. And of course, that's basically what this is saying. And this is saying that if we give belief to any part of the illusion, then we actually give belief to the whole. So I can't pick and choose and say, I won't believe in that, and I won't believe in that, and I won't believe in that because I don't want to, but I do believe in this. Because as soon as we give our belief to any of it, then the truth is we've given our belief to the entire illusion, and we will experience the effects of that belief. And as has been pointed out earlier in this journal, if belief is present, then a tool that helps to break up belief is questioning or inquiry, or also called investigation. And as we've seen, as I've been going through the Seven Steps to Awakening and writing this journal, we've seen that there's been a lot of powerful questioning that has happened. And this powerful questioning helps to break up belief. However, as long as there is still belief, there is still belief. When belief is gone, the entire illusion is gone. So we don't really want to stop the investigation process or stop the inquiry process short. We don't want to say, oh, I have enough clarity now. I don't need inquiry anymore. Because unless that inquiry is total and belief is not at all, we are still susceptible to illusion. In fact, there's something in early NTI. It's in NTI Matthew, either 5, 6, or 7, that talks about how when we are lost in the dark, we don't know that we're lost in the dark. And so we need to be careful about thinking that we're clear as long as there's any belief in the world at all. Until there is no belief at all, there is no world, we want to continue the inquiry process. So I'm going to scroll down and click on 449. And I'm also going to give you a link to 449. And I'm going to read 449 from The Seven Steps to Awakening. If you close your eyes, the vision of the external world is blotted out. If you remove the notion of the world from your consciousness, pure consciousness alone exists. So here, closing your eyes is just being used as an analogy, of course. If you close your eyes, you don't see a world. Where if the idea of the world is removed from your consciousness, you also do not see a world. You only know pure consciousness. If you close your eyes, the vision of the external world is blotted out. If you remove the notion of the world from your consciousness, pure consciousness alone exists. All right, let's look at the journal. What is this world? Or what is the world? Now, this is an inquiry process. So the inquiry put forth the question, what is the world? And the answer that I gave was, I don't know. I can't answer that question. And then the inquiry came back with a bit of wisdom. Whenever an answer or a definition does arise, question certainty regarding that thought. If certainty is not questioned, assumed certainty may be present. If certainty is questioned, it will be seen there is no certainty. Now, this is actually an interesting point. Many of us learn things as we study books like A Course in Miracles. We learn metaphysics. And we learn teachings like the world is the projection of my mind. And what we don't notice is we take on those teachings as a belief. And a belief is not the same thing as clear seeing or direct experience. And in fact, what beliefs do is beliefs actually cover over clear seeing. And the funny thing is, that's even true of spiritual beliefs. As long as we hold to anything as a belief, we're blocking the light. You can see any belief at all as like a dark piece of cardboard, and if you hold it up, you block out the light. And so what this particular journal entry is saying is, you know, be careful about giving answers that come from intellectual knowledge or belief. For example, what is the world? If I was to quickly answer from, you know, study of A Course in Miracles, the world is a projection of my mind. If I find any answer like that coming, the next thing I need to do is start questioning it. How do I know that? You know, if I start asking, how do I know that? Well, then the next answer is going to be, well, I learned it. it's a belief, you know. And then if I know that all beliefs block light, I'll realize even that belief has to be let go. And in fact, before I came into the room, you know, Dove was reading from A Course in Miracles, Lesson 189, Paragraph 7. And, you know, this is a pretty famous part of the course. I think many people are familiar with this. But what's really interesting when you look at paragraph 7, I'm turning to it now, is some of the things that it asks us to let go of. Notice it asks us to let go of, well, of course, all thoughts about what we are and all thoughts about what God is. And of course, all concepts that we've learned about the world and all images we hold about ourselves. But it also asks us to empty our minds of everything we think is true or false. Empty our minds of everything we think is true or false. So the idea that the world is a projection of my mind is a learned concept. It's something that I have learned as true. But if I'm asked to let go of everything that my mind thinks is true or false, I have to let go of that too. And in fact, that's why as you continue to read paragraph 7, you get down near the end, it says, hold on to nothing. Do not bring with you one thought the past has taught, nor one belief you ever learned before from anything. That includes what you've learned from A Course in Miracles or what you've learned from your own inner teacher. Everything the inner teacher gives us also, it has a temporary usefulness to move us along in the right direction. But at some point, all of that has to be let go. In fact, NTI is very clear about that. NTI asks us not to believe anything that is given. However, it does say there are useful symbols that will be given and hold to them for a time, but release them when their time has passed. And it asks us to keep moving by letting go until there is nothing left to hold on to. So again, even the idea, the world is a projection of my mind, it has a usefulness. It has a usefulness for a time to teach us to look at our untrue thoughts and release them. But then at some point, even that idea has to be released. It's similar to what Ramana Maharshi talked about. He was actually talking about the question, who am I? But he said that sometimes, you know, when you have a thorn in your foot, you need another thorn to remove that thorn. But once the thorn has been removed from the foot, you throw both thorns away. So the concepts that we are given, even by Holy Spirit, you know, even through Jesus and A Course in Miracles, these concepts are all temporary concepts for as long as they're useful. They're not to be believed as facts and held on to permanently. Or they also are the black cardboard that blocks the light. And so at some point, the questioning is actually turned toward even the thoughts that we were taught in our process of awakening, so that we will start to drop them as well, so that we get to that empty point. Again, as you know, Lesson 189, paragraph 7, forget this course, right? All of the learning we did in the course, all of which was helpful for a time, at some point must also be forgotten. So what is the world? The answer that I came again with the clarity of inquiry, I don't know, I can't answer that question. And then the clarity of inquiry continued. Whenever an answer or a definition does arise, and again, this means no matter what it is, even if it's something learned through spiritual teaching, question certainty regarding that thought. If certainty is not questioned, assumed certainty may be present. If certainty is questioned, it will be seen there is no certainty. So why don't we go ahead and scroll on down and click on number 450. Number 450 from the Seven Steps to Awakening says, the world and the I exist only as notions, not as fact or as reality. This is one reason, by the way, that the statement, the world is a projection of my mind, is only a symbol and not ultimately a truth. Earlier in the journal, through investigation, what I came to see is that the world is a projection of my mind, but the my in that sentence is, well, what we would call the ego. It's the false self. And if the false self itself ultimately does not exist, it certainly cannot project a world. Therefore, the idea that the world is a projection of my mind, although incredibly helpful, is not ultimately a truth. The world and the I exist only as notions, not as fact, nor as reality. All right, let's look at number 450 in the journal. The experience of local existence, and of course that means as seeing myself as a separate person, and that all of my perspective only comes from this perspective right here. So it's local to this body, local to this position. The experience of local existence comes from the I am this thought. The experience of world comes from the I am this thought. Because if I am this, then everything else must be projected out as I am not that. Both mind fantasies and intuitive whispers are projected out because I am this is firmly believed to be true. So what this is really saying, again, is the I thought or the I am this thought is the apparent cause of the entire world. Without an I am this thought, there could be no world. But that's only because I am this is believed. Without a belief in I am this or the I thought, there is no projection, and therefore there is no world. So the core thought that needs to be released or unbelieved is the I am this thought, which is often called the I thought, which is also called the thought of separation, which is also called the ego. They're all synonymous. And without that root misperception, there also are no other misperceptions. There's only truth. The experience of local existence comes from the I am this thought. The experience of the world comes from the I am this thought. Because if I am this, then everything else must be projected out as I am not that. Both mind fantasies and intuitive whispers are projected out. And we talked a lot last week about how intuitive whispers are projected out into the appearance of a Jesus, the appearance of a Ramana Maharshi, the appearance of a Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, the appearance of A Course in Miracles, right? They're projected out and given some type of form, and they become a part of the dream, although they are a part of the dream that points toward truth. They're still a part of the dream. Both mind fantasies and intuitive whispers are projected out because I am this is firmly believed to be true. So no I, then also no projection. All right, we can scroll down and click on number 451. Number 451 from Yoga Vasistha says, creation, world, movement of consciousness, etc., are mere words without substance. When such ideas are abandoned, the world and the I cease to be, and consciousness alone exists, pure and immutable. This unconditioned consciousness alone is, not else is, not even the nature of diverse objects here. So again, what this is saying is there is no projection because there is no I to actually project. Creation, world, movement of consciousness, etc., are mere words without substance. When such ideas are abandoned, the world and the I cease to be, and consciousness alone exists, pure and immutable. This unconditioned consciousness alone is, not else is. Not even the nature of diverse objects here. It's So we can go to 451 in the journal now. Okay, so this is an inquiry that has arisen out of the contemplation of this quote. What thought is seen to be the most predominant thought in the mind? Undoubtedly, it is I, me, mine, my perspective. This I thought has been noticed as clearly dominant. There is no thought that does not have I at its root. I also notice growing tired of this thought, but I feel no direct resistance to it or judgment of it, just noticing its frequency and growing tired. Is everything seen and experienced through I? Yes. Is there present knowledge regarding what may be seen or experienced without I as the filter of everything? No. I as person, body, mind places I in a local form and sees everything else as not I. I cannot imagine seeing or experiencing without this definite local position. Is there willingness to abandon this local position? And the answer given was yes. I've mentioned in an earlier teaching that I wrote about a doubt that I had that the true self is actually eternal and omnipresent. And that this doubt came from never having any experience that was not local. Now, some of you know that I did once have a mystical experience of having my awareness shift into an apple. And for that time, I was an apple. And I was definitely not human. I've told you about this. There was no thinking. But even then, even though my awareness shifted from, you know, you could say one object, the body-mind, to another object, the apple, it was still a local perspective. So I've had no experience that I could call a non-local experience. And so, of course, because I had no direct experience of it, there was a doubt. Even though I've heard stories like Joe Wolf's story about how he had a non-local experience, and Robert Adams had a non-local experience as a child, actually, in math class, it's not anything that I ever experienced. Well, on this particular day, later in the day, I did have a brief non-local experience. And I'm sure it came about because I said yes to that question, is there willingness to abandon this local position? This was one of those experiences that only lasts a few instants. And it happened, this was in the summer when this was written, or at least warm weather. You can see it was May 16th. So what happened that day is I went outside later in the day, and I think I'd been mowing the lawn or something. I don't remember. Maybe I was trimming weeds. And when I got tired from the work in the heat, I decided to lay down under the shade tree for a bit. So I was laying in the grass under the shade tree looking up. And while I was just laying there resting, not at all thinking about this contemplation, just resting. In fact, it's possible I wasn't really thinking about anything. I was literally just resting. And I was looking above me at the leaves of the tree that were blowing in the wind. And I had this experience of being everything that was within my perception. It wasn't like Robert Adams' experience where he became the entire universe. It was nothing like that. But I was this body, I was the ground, I was the tree, I was the leaves, I was the wind. You know, I think the way some people describe this is actually, and this is a perfect description, was that actually I couldn't find an I or a me anywhere. So it's not like my localness expanded and now I, you know, I was a body, a ground, a tree, leaves, and wind, and but not anything else. The truth is there just was no I, there was no self, there was just this experience of being everything that was within my perception, everything that was within my perceptual range. That kind of leaves me speechless, as you can tell, to even look back upon it as a memory. There's just not a lot to say about it. Yeah, there's just not a lot to say about it. I mean, it was what it was. But what it was something other than this seemingly definite local I. It was not that. There was no separation at all. So what causes us then to experience the world as this person, whichever person we perceive ourselves to be? It's the I am this thought. Without an I am this thought, that experience simply doesn't exist. And again, it's not like the experience was, okay, I'm not this body, but I am this body, this ground, this tree, these leaves, and this wind. You know, that would have just been kind of a broadening of the I am this. There was no I am this. And therefore, because there was no I am this, I was everything that was within my perceptual realm in that moment. All right, so I guess that's all I have to say about 451. So why don't we go ahead and scroll down and click on 452. And I will read 452. From the Seven Steps to Awakening. The illusory appearance of objects is of no practical use. The illusory appearance of objects is of no practical use. All right, let's go to the journal. And it looks like the inquiry kicked in again during the contemplation of this, so let's follow the inquiry and see where it goes. What purpose does the world have to the self? Of course, this is the capital S self. What purpose does the world have to the self? I can see the purposes given to the world by the person, body, mind. The world has a purpose of making me feel safe. The world has a purpose of making me feel like I am a part of something, belonging, connection, appreciation. The world has a purpose of bringing me joy, a sense of satisfaction and fulfillment. However, I see these purposes are not necessary to the self, since the self does not have the sense of lack. So what purpose does the world have to the self? Without first envisioning a sense of lack, I cannot find a purpose for the world. I must answer that the world cannot have purpose to the self. And then I wrote at the bottom, it is noted that there is a sense of sadness about this, which indicates attachment to the world and wanting it to have a meaningful purpose. And for some reason, I feel like saying, this is also on May 16th. So this writing would have happened before the non-local experience under the tree. So that experience had not yet happened later in the day. So what I was feeling sadness at was the idea of not being fulfilled by something other than myself. So I was feeling sad about not being fulfilled by a beautiful sunny day, or not being fulfilled by the love of a friend. Or not being fulfilled by, you know, chocolate peanut butter Lindt candy. The realization that the only way this kind of fulfillment can come is if first there's a sense of lack was very clear. But what I actually found, and this is kind of interesting because intellectually I'm not certain that we would ever get to this. We would only get to this through a clear inquiry that was not intellectual. What I found was what I'm going to have to call an attachment to lack. An attachment to that experience of not having and then having. And it's a very temporary experience, of course. You know, this is probably the base or the root of all addictions, right? Not having and then having. We're addicted to that cycle of not having and then having. But I found within me an attachment to lack. It sounds insane, and of course Jesus tells us in the Course that we are insane. But it was very clear to me that because the self had no lack, it also had no need for anything in the world. Not in the way that a seeming person does. And therefore, it doesn't get the same object-focused fulfillment. We could also call that a fix that a person gets. But I felt a sadness about this scene. It wasn't just a clear scene like, oh, yes, I see. It was a clear scene followed by a sadness, which indicates an attachment. An attachment to wanting the world to have a meaningful purpose, which only comes through first having a sense of lack. Now, I wonder how many of us have realized that we have an attachment to a sense of lack. We may realize we have a belief in lack, but have we realized we're actually attached to that belief in lack? Like an addict is attached to heroin, for example. And that we love the seek and find, the seek and find, the seek and find. And because we love the seek and find, we do not give up the belief in lack. Let's move on to 453. You can scroll down and click on 453A. Well, I see Barb asking, what does the term practical mean? Was that in the writing? I don't remember now. I'd have to go back and look. I don't remember. Let me read 453. Yes, it was in 452. Okay, let me just go back and look at 452 again for you then. Let me see what it says. What purpose does the world have to the self? I can see the purposes given to the world by the person, body, mind. Excuse me for 1 second. The world. Oh, it's in the Seven Steps book. Oh, good. So I won't find it by reading my journal. Okay, let me go back to the book then. The illusory appearance of objects is of no practical use. Oh, yeah. This is a little shorter, too. We won't have to do as much reading. In this case, at least the way that I understood the word practical, it would have meant meaningful. You know, so like if I have a sense of lack in the area of belonging, like I don't feel like I belong, then having ACIM Gather and friends has a practical use for me. It fulfills that sense of lack. But if I do not have a sense of lack, then there's nothing that has a practical use for me. Nothing. That's the way I understood it. Yeah, okay. So now we're ready for 453. I'll read from the Seven Steps. When you affirm the reality of the illusory appearance, you invite unhappiness. When its unreality is realized, there is great happiness. I'm now over in the 600s somewhere. But I recently wrote another journal entry. In fact, I'm going to go find it because I posted it in Facebook so I can find it pretty quickly. I recently wrote another journal entry that talked about how the belief that I'm a personal self is actually torture. Here it is. This is actually, it's my contemplation of number 680. There is torture in the idea I am a person. There is suffering embedded in every need, every want, and every opinion. Peace comes from realizing myself beyond the person. This realization, without swaying from it, is liberation from all pain. That's very similar to what 453 is saying. When you affirm the reality of the illusory appearance, you invite unhappiness. So there's suffering embedded in every need, every want, and every opinion. There's suffering embedded in all false beliefs. But when its unreality is realized, there is great happiness. Now, 453 I wrote about in, I wrote more than one response in contemplation. So first let's look at 453A. If the world's purpose is perceived as to give me happiness, what is experienced? This is an inquiry, and my answer to the inquiry was grasping. Any happiness that is obtained is temporary, so the effort to obtain happiness must continue. There is also judgment about what is and is not happiness. And as a result of that judgment, both are experienced. So this is clarity that arose in response to the question, if the world's purpose is perceived as to give me happiness, what is experienced? And I notice that there's an ongoing grasping, even though I may have the temporary fulfillment. When that temporary fulfillment ends, there's another ongoing grasping. Of course, we know this in the language of A Course in Miracles as seek and do not find. But I notice that in addition to that, there is also a judgment of what is and is not happiness. So, for example, I may say, being among friends or being with a romantic partner is happiness. Being alone, the experience of having no friends or no romantic partner is sadness or suffering. So I have defined what is happiness and what is not happiness, which then gives me the experience of both. The next inquiry, if the world's purpose is perceived as to give me a sense of belonging, what is experienced? Again, grasping. Any sense of belonging can be lost, so even if it seems present, there must be effort to maintain it. There are also ideas about what belonging, love, or approval, about what is belonging, love, or approval, and what isn't. So both are perceived and experienced. It's really the same answer. It is true that if we want very much to feel like we belong to a particular group, we may abandon our own intuitive guidance in favor of the group. That's how strong the sense of belonging can be and how much we grasp to hold on to feeling like we belong. I think it was during the summer that I shared a couple of YouTube videos that showed just how far we will go against our own wisdom in order to feel like we belong. And in fact, this wasn't even belonging to strong peer groups. This was just belonging with strangers who appeared to be around us. We didn't want to stand apart from the strangers. One of the experiments was in an elevator. This was actually Candid Camera did this. In an elevator, there's a person standing in the elevator facing forward like we do. So that you know when the elevator door opens, you know what floor it's on, you know all of the information is forward. But what happened in this Candid Camera video is one by one, cast members got onto the elevator with the unsuspecting person, and they would stand facing towards the back. And what happened in every instance was that the unsuspecting person would also stand and face towards the back, even though that made no sense, just to fit in with the others in the elevator, just to belong. Another YouTube that I posted was an experiment where there were 13 people, 12 of which were actors and one unsuspecting. And they were told they were participating in a psychology experiment regarding perception. And what happened was they were shown a line drawn on a large white poster board. And then just a little bit further along on the same white poster board, there were four different lines. And they were told that their job was to pick out which of the four lines was the same size as the first line. And the funny thing is, it wasn't tricky. The answer was obvious. So what happened was, like in the experiment, was when the first actor answered, he chose the wrong answer. Like maybe he said it was number four, when actually it was line number two. The unsuspecting person kind of laughed at him and said, it's two. it's obvious, it's two. But then as they went on, the other actors also chose four. By the second time around, the unsuspecting person began to copy the actors and say whatever they said, even though it was obviously the wrong answer. So even if we belong to a group, we will go against our own wisdom to conform because we're so afraid of losing that. We also, again, we have definitions of what it means to belong and what it doesn't mean to belong. If I come into this room and you guys are writing nice statements as I speak, I feel like I belong, or statements that I judge as nice. But if I come into this room and you guys begin typing things like, she's such an idiot, when is she going to shut up, why does Dove keep letting her come here and teach, I feel like I don't belong. See, I judge one type of statements as belonging, another type of statements as not belonging. So I have the experience of both. So again, both grasping and judgment come out of the belief that the world's purpose is to give me a sense of belonging. Just like both grasping and judgment came out of a belief that the world's purpose is to give me happiness. The next inquiry question. If the world's purpose is perceived as to make me safe, what is experienced? Well, the first answer that came is fear. Because the belief that I can be unsafe is inherent in the belief in lack, right? It's inherent in this purpose, and it is always seen as a possibility. Again, there's going to be grasping, and there's going to be judgment. Those are still there. But there's also going to be, at least in my case, great fear. And there will probably also be fear in the first two as well. I just didn't see it till we got to the third question. There's always the fear of not having this thing I think I need in order to fulfill my sense of lack. And yet at the same time, in spite of the fact that I have grasping, that I have judgment, and that I have fear, I'm still addicted to this sense of lack. All right, so let's scroll down and click on 453B. Again, 453 said, when you affirm the reality of the illusory appearance, you invite unhappiness. And we just saw from 453A how we do that, how we invite unhappiness through grasping, judgment, and fear, right? By believing that the world has a practical purpose for us, that affirms its reality if we believe it has a practical purpose. When you affirm the reality of the illusory appearance, you invite unhappiness. When its unreality is realized, there is great happiness. All right, so let's look at 453B. Inherent in the idea of a purposeful world, or we could call it a practical world, you know, it has a practical purpose for me. Inherent in the idea of purposeful world, there is also the idea of me. Without me, who needs something from the world, again, the belief in lack, the world can have no purpose. Inherent in the idea of me is local, which means this and not that. And inherent in this idea is a sense of not everything, and therefore lack. So in other words, as long as I'm attached to the idea I am a person, or attached to the idea of I am this, attached to the idea of me, attached to the I thought, I'm going to have a sense of lack. It's inherent in that, because how can I not be everything and not experience lack? Because there's something that's missing from me, right? Realizing the unreality of local is an opening far beyond any inkling of lack. Therefore, it is also great, fully abundant joy. With this seeing, is there sadness at the idea the world has no purpose? So what's happening now is it's moving back into an inquiry. You'll remember a couple of journal entries back. I saw clearly that the only way the world could have a purpose is if I had a sense of lack, but I was sad about that. I was sad about giving up the fulfillment that comes from having a sense of lack, right? But now this is saying, if you realize that the unreality of local, if you realize that you can only have a sense of lack if you believe you're a local, if you believe you're I am this, and if you also realize that by finding you are not I am this, that's it's an opening that is so far beyond even the idea of lack that it's also fully abundant joy. In other words, there's always fulfillment. There's not even an idea that there can't be fulfillment, right? Are you still sad? Do you actually need lack in order to feel fulfilled? Or could there be such an amazing, even fulfillment isn't an appropriate word, but we have no other word here. An amazing sense of fulfillment that's completely beyond lack. If you could know that, if you could know the constant joy and contentment of sunshine on your shoulders, for example, do you really need to go back to having rainy days in order to enjoy that sunshine on your shoulders? So with this scene, is there sadness at the idea that the world has no purpose? And of course I said, no, there cannot be sadness with even a hint of this joy and awareness. And again, what happens when I'm in the contemplation is that seeing occurs. In fact, on my Facebook page today, I posted a quote from Yoga Vasistha that talked about how true seeing occurs either when you're awakened, when you realize the self, or in deep contemplation. In other words, when we're in very deep contemplation, we have true seeing. We may then appear to lose it when we come out of deep contemplation, so it's kind of an in and out kind of thing. But true seeing does occur in deep contemplation, and that is also my experience. So I was having a true seeing of this joy that has no opposite, of this fulfillment that has no lack, of this complete, it has no word, this complete fulfillment that is beyond the word fulfillment. And I realized that if that was my experience, that I could not be sad about not having the fulfillment that comes in the world. So that's it for me now. I'm out of time, and it's time for John Mulrooney. So what I will do is release the mic, and you guys enjoy Mulrooney, okay? Bye.